Hello and good evening. I'm Lissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Yesterday, the Health Ministry announced that it is prohibiting all activities, gatherings, and social meetings related to political campaigning for next month's Melaka polls. The Ministry of Health cited a need to reduce the risk of new COVID-19 infections. Now, in response to this, the Coalition for Clean and Fair Elections, or better known as Bersih 2.0, had called for the Health Minister to reconsider this total ban, calling it a, quote, suppression of democracy, end quote. Bersih's chairperson, Thomas Fine, joins us on the show now. Thomas, can you begin by elaborating why Bersih believes the ban on physical gatherings for the Melaka elections is undemocratic?
Thank you for having me on the show, Melissa and Sharad. Yes, we are quite concerned with that because while we understand the need to avoid a spike in COVID infection during this time, the total ban on physical gathering and social activities related to election in Melaka without offering any alternative for the candidates and also for the voters to hear from themselves from the candidates, to us is a suppression of the rights of candidates and voters, and therefore ultimately suppression of democracy.
Thomas, in your statement, Bersih notes also that there seems to be a contradiction between the National Recovery Plan status of Melaka, which is in phase four, and the restrictions placed on very specific election-related activities. What do you see going on there? I mean, why is this, this inconsistency, as it were? Is it due to an understanding of the culture around elections? There's much more kind of spectacle. Many more people tend to come to the nomination day and so on and so forth. Is this, in some sense, a recognition by the EC of the culture of polling and elections in Malaysia?
Yes, I think you pointed out that Melaka just went into phase four of the National Recovery Plan last week, 18th of October. And under the SOP of this phase four, social gatherings are allowed, but capped at 50% capacity and social distancing should be observed. We believe that that is sufficient. And that is reflective of the current COVID situation right now in the country and also in Melaka, where vaccination rate is 90% over. And it should have been followed. But what Khairi Jamaluddin, the health minister, declared yesterday was out of the SOP. It was not in compliance. So it was really targeting the elections. To us, you know, SOP are there for a purpose and they have to be complied. If any violation, action should be taken. The problem that we are seeing over here is that actions are not taken when politicians violate SOP. I think along with that announcement, there was a video that went viral of a function where Bosco Najib was welcomed into a big hall crowded with people packed with no social distancing in Melaka. I think everyone there should be fine, you know, if the SOP is in place. So what we are going for is stricter enforcement of SOP, not a ban on social gathering.
Right. Thomas, just looking at some of the social media chatter following the announcement by the Health Ministry, it seemed that it received overwhelming support on some social media channels because of our experiences with what happened in the Sabah elections. And, you know, it seemed that perhaps the move by the MOH will be well received by voters in helping allay some of their concerns when it comes to returning home or coming out to vote in the Melaka elections. Do you think that this might be the case?
Yes, I think no one in their right mind wants to see another spike in COVID cases after we have gone through such a long spell since the Sabah election. We are just beginning to see the figures going down. So certainly nobody wants to see that. But I think the concern that we have when it comes to an election is that, first of all, elections and parliament, for that matter, should not be simply arbitrary suspended for reason. There must be strong reason. I think the thing that we are concerned about also is that when you have a total ban on social gathering or related to election, it would probably disadvantage the opposition. Because as we know, I mean, quite normal over here, parties that are aligned with the government, they get a lot more airtime, positive airtime, compared to those in opposition. So if opposition and politicians are not allowed to hold charama and reach out to the people during this time, and all the people get would be just news focusing on ruling party and their achievement, I think that would make the playing ground unfair, not level for the opposition.
Thomas, you I think kind of hit the nail on the head when you talk about, you know, the inability to enforce, you know, SOPs, especially on VIPs and people in power, and this impulse to ban things rather than, in fact, you know, make everybody comply with SOPs, certainly is an institutional, I think, default position in Malaysia. And I want to come to that, and especially the EC's track record so far in using this as an opportunity to the Malacca polls, that is, to kind of innovate. And in your statement, Berse notes that, say, for instance, nomination day can be treated differently. Polling days could be extended, or the polling day could be extended to several days. Could you talk us through some of the innovations that you would like to see, even though it might seem like we're speaking to a brick wall at times?
Yes, I think, first of all, nomination day. You know, we have crammed nomination day to basically 1 hour, you know, where on that Saturday, all the candidates come with their paper and praying hard that they will not be rejected. And then at 10 o'clock, you know, the returning officer reading out. And then you have all the parties and the supporter gathering. That's really unnecessary. So what we are proposing is that nomination should be a period where they can come to the office of SPR, submit their documents, have it checked. If there's any problem, have it rectified. And then on Saturday, just release online the list of candidates for that constituency all over Melaka. So that would take away basically the need to gather. Then also during campaign period, since we agree there should be some restricting on gatherings, but what we are suggesting is follow the SOP of phase four. The EC can insist of having seatings, chairs, spaced out 1 meter apart for all the charama, so that there is no need to gather and all attendees must be seated and there's strict enforcement. And the same applies from house-to-house visitation, limited to 5 people, and the campaigners cannot go into the house or must stand at least 2 meters away. But the most important innovation that I think EC need to consider this time is to call on government-owned TVs and radio broadcasts outlets to provide free airtime for all parties and all candidates. Political discussion among candidates, debates between chief ministers, candidates should be televised so that there is no need basically for people to attend big charama, but the avenue is provided. I think this is an opportune time that the EC must use its authority, its mandate, you know, under the Constitution, to call upon the the state media to provide airtime for these political candidates. And this is like an alternative to the restriction that needed to be enforced.
Yeah, I take your point on that, particularly as not all voters are on social media, so using a social media strategy could be quite limiting. Can I ask you, Thomas, because you mentioned, you know, the stricter enforcement, you said, you know, the suggestion of perhaps longer time for nomination day and better enforcement for SOPs, all of that might require more manpower on the side of the Election Commission. Is that what is limiting them?
Yes, I think it is. You can't avoid it, you know. If you want to keep people safe, you need to have more SOP, more manpower. But what we are proposing, if you extend, for example, polling day, instead of 1 day to 3 days, polling day, and then you schedule different groups of voters to come out on different day, you can actually cut down the number of voting streams or saluran from the usual 7 or 8 to maybe 2 or 3, so because you're not having big groups coming at one time. And that actually can be a cost-saving measure. Instead of multiple streams with multiple sets of election workers, it can be cut down, I believe. But these are just some of the things that EC really got to look into to keep elections safe, because we're not talking about just this current COVID, but there could be future pandemics that we have to deal with. Are we going to keep on restricting election and suspending democracy just to stay safe?
Yeah, Thomas, you bring up a very intriguing, or rather, Bursi in its statement brings up a very intriguing question of the unvaccinated or the vaccinated, in the, you know, however it may be. Is there, or do you hear of any plans to restrict unvaccinated people from voting? What was your concern in making that observation about, maybe testing people at polling stations?
Yes, I think there's always a fine balance between personal right and social responsibility. And we are definitely against any talk or any idea of not allowing unvaccinated people to vote, because voting is their fundamental and constitutional right. But I think what EC can do and have done in the past is that provide a health booth whereby some of the unvaccinated are required to do an instant COVID test. And if they are negative, then they are allowed to join the rest of the voter in the queue to vote. But if they are positive, their vote should be collected in the health booth itself so that they have an opportunity to vote. I think this is a recognition of the importance of voting rights.
Thomas, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. Thomas Van Der from Bursi 2.0. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back with more on Consider This. Stay tuned. Hi, thanks so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. Let's continue our discussion about the upcoming Melaka elections. Now, as the polls near, the respective parties and coalitions will have to eventually show their hand in organising a slate of candidates and managing possible coalition partners in what is becoming a crowded and fragmented field. Observers are looking at the tensions between UMNO and Bersatu, but also the response of Pakatan Harapan to the Rebel Four, as well as Dr. Mahathir's Pejuang, for signs of new divisions in national politics. So joining us on the show now to help us better understand the dynamics, the political dynamics at play, we have Associate Professor Dr. Hamidin Hamid, political analyst at University Malaya. Hamidin, let's start with the news of the Health Ministry's blanket ban on physical gatherings for related to political campaigning for the Melaka polls. I'm just wondering what you make of this, the likely impact of this move. Might this shift the ground in any way?
Thank you, Melissa. Thank you for having me. I think it is a very interesting statement made by Khairul Jamaluddin, and when Minister of Health issued a new guide on banning any social gathering during the election period in Malacca. First, I think is get very much give a headache for most of the political party at one, even for the voters. I think they are kind of in a very dark about what's going to happen in the campaign, particularly leading to the election day. Secondly, I think people are still confused what they mean, how they define a social gathering, meaning two or three people, four people, six people, where it's going to be held, and others. I think this is another thing that Minister of Health must come out with a very clear guidance of SOP to make things very much clear within this pandemic situation. But having said that, I think I totally agree with Thomas just now that it is a very much a measure that curbs, in my point of view, the freedom of democracy that we have, that we should be celebrating during the election.
Hamidin, you know, there's one thing that that is true of Malaysia, was part true of Indonesia at some point. You know, they used to refer to elections as pesta democracy, you know, and there's a lot of festivities and spectacle associated with our political practice of democracy. Is it possible that people can be informed, that they can make informed choices without these spectacles, without the drama that, you know, basically bring party supporters, often not from even that constituency, into the area, or, you know, the nomination day spectacle of different parties and their banners, all that, couldn't that be stripped away and we could still have a fairly robust democratic process?
Yes, I think, yes, we can, Shara, definitely. I think theoretically that should happen. But in each country, I think that's what we call political culture is different. So too in Malaysia. And in Malaysia, especially during the election, it's not only fiesta, but also it's businesses for most of the people. And in my point of view, this is where the style of campaign is totally different country to country. And even in Malaysia, you can see state to state is different, depend on the political party. But definitely, we hope that we want that things are moving forward for us, where this type of fiesta should be reduced, and which is more informed and debate about policy, about what matters most to the people, being carried out by the political party. If you see in Malaysian politics, basically during the election is very much a charity day for any political party. So it's very much, this is where the most of give or given and others, which I think still influence most of the Malaysian political party, and the behavior of Malaysian voters are strongly influenced by this.
Hamidin, do you agree with our previous guest, Thomas Fun from Bursa just now, who thinks that the blanket ban on these physical gatherings might be more detrimental to the opposition than to the ruling government?
Oh, yes, definitely. This ban will definitely, in my preview, cut the opposition legs very, very high. And this very much give a advantage to the government of the day, where they can, normally what they don't do, they will hide most of their activities under the government program. So they will survive to carry out their own program, while the opposition will have a very much difficult circumstances and measure to carry their program during the election. So with that, in my point of view, yes, it will give one piece to the ruling government, can take a government of the day. And in Malaysian culture, it's very difficult to curb and to distinguish between that, between the two, between the government of the day and also within party that contested in the election.
I mean, can we move to the question of the political dynamics that are developing in the state? There's been a lot of talk about, the UMNO Bersatu tensions developing, and also of the role of PAS in trying to be kind of peacemaker, trying to hold those sort of Malay-based parties together in a single kind of front. Where do you see this going, UMNO Bersatu PAS?
I think for UMNO Bersatu PAS, I think it's almost certain that it's not going to happen. in my point of view, because first, it's already a condition state by the National Assembly of UMNO, I think this year, it's sanctioned by that. So it's obviously it's very difficult to unlock that for UMNO. And at the same time, I think the mood even on the ground, I don't think UMNO grassroots would want to collaborate with Bersatu, because they see they will be threatened by the Bersatu, and they know that the Bersatu don't have any machinery and Bersatu will be rely on them. So why must they carry Bersatu on their back while they know they can work better with other people? And for PAS, in my point of view, it's not only as a mediator, but I think PAS also will look where it will benefit most, in my point of view. This is where PAS not only want to work with Bersatu and UMNO, but I think PAS will look where that they will benefit most in terms of what can they negotiate with those parties and what will they benefit from those parties.
Right. And what about Pakatan Harapan? What might they stand to lose or gain from the negotiations between UMNO and PAS and even Bersatu? I'm just wondering, particularly bearing in mind that we're not quite sure what's happening with the Malacca Four at the moment, the Rebel Four at the moment. What are you hearing, Hamidin?
I think it's in so far on the ground that we me and my Ilham team, we already for the last piece start kind of do our own preliminary research in Malacca, and the mood is very much on Pakatan Harapan not to take the four that's assemblymen, former assemblymen. I think it is clear that people don't want that kind of a politician. Very clear that people are angry with them, and I don't think to some extent any political party want to be associated with them at this particular moment. But it still depends, my point of view. They're still lobbying to be the candidate for Pakatan Harapan or any other party that want to contest in the election. But I doubt it will make much impact to the party. And my point of view, not we were surprised, for example, in some of the candidates. One of the four that we went to the area that is very unpopular, and I don't think we don't think that he can maintain the seat. So with that, in my point of view, Pakatan Harapan must be very strategic in to decide if they want to take the four.
Do you think Pakatan Harapan can take those four seats that used to be represented by the Malacca Four, those four aduns?
Yeah, I think Teluk Mas, for example, was under Pakatan Harapan before because it's from Bersatu. I think that area is very much under the Pakatan. Pekalan Balak, in my view, is very much clear under the DAP. So at least two, of course, I think it will be a good sign where Pakatan Harapan can regain seat. But another two of UMNO, I think that would be a tough one, especially in Sungai Udang, where you can have a lot of military votes. That always be a benefit for UMNO.
Hamidin, can we discuss, a statement that Zaid Hamidi made recently suggesting that Bersatu was inciting Malay voters to support DAP? It's a curious statement because he also went on to say that that UMNO has never sought to cooperate with the DAP, which is a curious statement to make considering what happened in Perak in dislodging the Bersatu Menteri Besar in the MOU that is signed between UMNO's Ismail Sabri and the Pakatan Harapan. What do you make of Zayed's statement?
I think this is where, Sharon, I think most of the people, and I think what Zayed want to do is very much to rally the crowd, his own supporter who want to believe his own narrative. But when you are right, when we see that it's very much how his statement contradict what UMNO has been doing, in my point of view, and looking at that same time when he said about that, it's very much because basically simply because Bersatu was under the PH before. But I think what is most of the political party, especially UMNO, and UMNO is good on that, I think it's really much rallying the crowd to be behind them, and obviously to do that, the issues of race, religion, and royalty will become a center in UMNO narrative. And I think that still will be the main center for UMNO in Malacca.
All right. Thank you so much for helping us think through some of the headlines that have been dominating the news portals in the past couple of days. But thank you for your time. That was political analyst Hamidin Hamid, and that's all we have for you on this episode of Consider This. Don't forget, you can get the latest news and information on COVID-19 vaccines at astroawani.com as well as the Astro Awani app. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching. Good night.
Good night.